Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. The reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 16, entitled The Lord's Attempt to Go to Vrindavan, verses 176-186. So we're going to read together, and then the last verse we'll read responsively. Eta bali vishvasare kaila vatana bhagya tantra asipuka prabhu darshana. After thinking this, the Mahapatra immediately informed the Mahamadan secretary, It is a great fortune for your governor. Let him come visit Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Patita karye yadi nirastra hanya asideka panchasata bhritya sange lanya. However, let me make it understood that he should come here without weapons. He may bring with him 5 or 7 servants. Vishvasa yanya tanhari sakala kahila hindu vesha darise yavanaiva. The secretary returns to the Mahamadan governor and informed him of this news. Dressing himself like a Hindu, the Mahamadan governor then came to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Dura haite prabhu deki bhumi te padiya dandava kariyashu purakita hanya. Upon seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from a distant place, the Mahamadan governor fell to the ground and offered obeisances. Tears came to his eyes and he was jubilant and with ecstatic emotions. Mahapatra ainila tanre kariya samana yoda haite prabhu age laya krishna nama. Arriving in that way, the Mahamadan governor was respectfully brought before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by the Mahapatra. The governor then stood before the Lord with folded hands and he chanted the holy name of Krishna. Adhama yavana kule kena janma haila vidhi more kindu kule kena na janmaila. The governor then submissively asked, why was I born in a Mahamadan family? This is considered a low birth. Why didn't Supreme Providence grant me a birth in a Hindu family? Hindu haile paitama tomara charna sindina vidyarta morae deha yauka parana. If I had taken birth in a Hindu family, it would have been easy for me to remain near your lotus feet. Since my body is now useless, let me die immediately. Itasuni Mahapatra Adishta Hanya Prabhuke Karena Stuti Charane Dariya.
Upon hearing the governor's submissive statement, the Mahapatra was overwhelmed with joy. He clasped the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and began to offer the following prayers.
Chandala Pavitra Yamra Sri Nama Shravane Hina Tomara Ejiva Paila Darshane.
Simply by hearing your holy name, a chandala, the lowest of men, can be purified. Now this conditioned soul has received your personal interview.
Inhara ye gati ite ki vishmaya tumara darshana prabhava e matahaya.
It is no wonder that this Mohammedan governor has attained such results. Simply by seeing you, all this is possible. So we'll read this responsively.
Yanama deya shravananu kirtanat yat pravanad yat smarnad apikvachit svadopi sadya savanaya kalpate kutapunaste bhagavanu darshanat. Namadeya Shravana Nukirnanat Yat Pradvanad Yat Smaranad Api Kvachit Svadopi Sadya Savanaya Kalpate Kutapunaste Bhagavanu Darshanat.
I'll change the melody.
Yanamadeya Shravananu Kirtanad Yat Pravanad Yat Smarnad Api Kvachit Svadopi Sadya Savanaya Kalpate Kunta Punaste Bhagavanu Darshanat. Deya Shravananu Kirtanad Yat Pravanad Yat Smaranad Apikvachit Svadopi Sadya Savanaya Kalpate Kunta Punaste Bhagavanu Darshanat. Shravananu Kirtanat Yat Pravanad Yat Smaranad Api Kvachit Svadopi Sadya Savanaya Kalpate Kuta Punaste Bhagavanu Darshanat.
Svadopi Sadya Savanaya
Please chant. Yat of whom? Namadeya of the name. Shravana from hearing. Anukirtanat, and thereafter from chanting. Yat to whom? Pravanat from offering respects. Yat of whom? Smaranat, from simply remembering. Api, also. Kvachit, sometimes. Svadaha, a dog eater. Api, even. Sadyaha, immediately. Savanaya, for performing Vedic sacrifices. Kalpate becomes eligible. Utaha, what to speak. Punaha, again. Te, of you. Bhagavan, O Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nu, certainly. Darshanat, from seeing. Translation. To say nothing of the spiritual advancement of persons who see the Supreme face to face, the Supreme Person face to face, even a person born in a family of dog eaters becomes immediately eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices if he once utters the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or chants about him, hears about his pastimes, offers him obeisances, or even remembers him. So let's read this verse together. To say nothing of the spiritual advancement of persons who see the Supreme Person face to face, even a person born in a family of dog eaters becomes immediately eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices if he once utters the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or chants about him, or hears about his pastimes, offers him obeisances, or even remembers him. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.33.6. According to this verse, it doesn't matter what position a person holds. One may be the lowest of the low, a chandala, or dog eater. But if he takes to chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord, he is immediately eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices. This is especially true in this age of Kali. Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Iva Kevalam. Hari Naste, 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 Eva Gatir Anyata. Brihan Naradiya Purana, 38.126. A person born in a Brahmin family cannot perform Vedic sacrifices until he is properly purified and has attained his sacred thread. However, according to this verse, it is understood that even a low-born person can immediately perform sacrifices if he sincerely chants and hears the holy name of the Lord. Sometimes envious people ask how Europeans and Americans in this Krishna consciousness movement can become Brahmins and perform sacrifices. They do not know. Yeah, it says a person born in a Brahmana family. Okay, I'll just start the paragraph here.
I don't know which one's the original one. I mean, I guess that's the original one.
I think so. A person born in a Brahmana family cannot perform Vedic sacrifices until he is properly purified and has attained his sacred thread. However, according to this verse, it is understood that even a low-born person can immediately perform sacrifices if he sincerely chants and hears the holy name of the Lord. Sometimes envious people ask how Europeans and Americans in this Krishna consciousness movement can become Brahmanas and perform sacrifices. They do not know that the Europeans and Americans have already been purified by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is the proof. Svado pi sadaya sab. Savanaya Kalpate. One may be born in a family of dog eaters, but he can perform sacrifices simply by chanting the Maha Mantra. Those who find fault in the Western Vaishnavas should consider this statement from Srimad Bhagavatam and the commentary on this verse by Srila Jiva Goswami. In this regard, Srila Jiva Goswami has stated that to become a Brahmana, one has to wait for purification and undergo the sacred thread ceremony. But a chanter of the holy name does not have to wait for the sacred thread ceremony. We do not allow devotees to perform sacrifices until they are properly initiated in the sacred thread ceremony. Yet according to this verse, an offenseless chanter of the holy name is already fit to perform a fire ceremony, even though he is not doubly initiated by the sacred thread ceremony. This is the verdict given by Lord Kapiladeva in his instructions to his mother, Devahuti. It was Lord Kapiladeva who instructed Devahuti in pure Sankhya philosophy. To say nothing of the spiritual advancement of persons who see the Supreme face to face, even a person born in a family of dog eaters becomes immediately eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices if he once utters the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or chants about him, hears about his pastimes, offers him obeisances, or even remembers him. Born in the darkness of ignorance, my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So, in this chapter on the Lord's attempt to go to Vrindavan, we have a pastime where the Mohammedan governor is seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu face to face and becomes ecstatic and is wishing that, is asking why he was born in a Mohammedan family and considering this a low birth, and was wondering why he didn't have a higher birth, which he would consider a higher birth in a Hindu family. And just by seeing the Lord and chanting Hare Krishna, he becomes purified. And in describing this, we can see from this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that how special is the chanting of the Lord's names, that no matter where you come from or what position you're in, that you can become purified, that you can become Krishna conscious. Even if you have not been, if you're chanting purely, even if you've not been recognized in such a way by being doubly initiated or by having a the Brahminical thread, which is a sign of following Brahminical principles. Even if you're just chanting purely, you can be the most qualified. And in that purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about the present situation at the time, which was when the Western devotees came to India. Seems like that just because of their appearance, they were not seen as being qualified, even though they were following the regular principles and chanting Hare Krishna and being purified by the mantra and being purified by the process of bhakti yoga. They weren't accepted as Brahmins, at least initially. They were seen for their bodily designation, but not seen for their qualifications by their qualities and their characteristics, at least initially. And so this is the mode of ignorance or mode of darkness. It's that we just see the faults in others externally, and we don't see them for who they really are. And this is even without taking regards to the fact that someone is chanting Hare Krishna. You know, an Uttam Adhikari is someone who sees with perfect vision. He sees that the Lord Krishna is in the person's heart and that this person is a pure devotee. And he treats the person as such. Even when to speak of someone who's chanting Hare Krishna and who's actually following the process and becoming purified spiritually and is becoming more closely aligned and acting in such a way as a pure devotee, that this and is free from finding fault in others, what to speak of the activity of that person that we should really honor and even inquire from them, regardless of whether they're in a Western body or in an Eastern body. And so this propensity to find fault in others is the mode of ignorance and is something that can be purified by the process of Krishna consciousness. Almost every time that I visit Vrindavan, I'll be standing on the line waiting to take prasadam in Krishna Balaram, and some wonderful devotee standing next to me will start speaking to me in Russian. And this will go on for maybe, literally, usually it's a couple of minutes, you know, nodding my head, listening, seeing if I can catch anything. And I said, Hare Krishna Prabhu, you know, it's very nice to meet you. I'm from the U.S. I don't understand Russian. And so it's just very interesting that there's so many devotees from Russia coming to Vrindavan, that just to be in a white body, someone would automatically assume that you're Russian. So this is kind of the vision that we may have of others, that when we see them, we immediately judge them for their appearances. But we should be careful, because we're not this body, right? I mean, that's the most basic teaching in Bhagavad Gita. And it's very natural for us, since we've been in this life, because we have a material body, to just judge people based on their appearances. This is one of the things that I've been trained to do for years and years and years as a physician, is to see somebody for their bodily appearances. And based on that, based on the functions of their body and the appearances of their bodies, to make a diagnosis. And this can be very traumatic for some people, you know, because one, you know, people don't like to be ethnically categorized. But the fact of the matter is that, as far as bodies go, certain ethnicities have certain diseases. People don't like to be characterized by the way their mind is. You know, but the fact of the matter is that some people, their mind is crazy. It's more crazy than just thinking that we're the body, because this is the insanity that we learn about when we practice spiritual life, that it's really insane to think that we're the body. But actually, there is an even deeper insanity, to not be able to really even fit into the society in a way that's mentally stable or mentally functional. You know, there's antisocial personality disorder, people that just compulsively commit crimes, and kill other people or steal things. There's, you know, schizophrenia or bipolar disorder where people are, you know, they can't work, they can't associate with other people, they can't function normally. There's depression and anxiety where also people can't function normally. And people don't, sometimes they don't like these labels, you know, but the fact of the matter is that they actually, you know, exist. So in a sense, it's natural to see that we're different. We're different bodily. But the difference that we have bodily comes from our karma, comes from our previous activities. I like Ridhananda Maharaj's statement once in one of his classes when I first started coming to Srimad Bhagavatam class. He said that if you want to see your karma, if you want to know your karma, just look in the mirror. And that really resonated with me. You know, because it helped kind of answer the question for me, like, why do bad things happen to so-called good people? You know? Why do some people have a lower birth and some people have a higher birth? And it has to do with our past activities. The activities we're doing now are shaping our future life. But the activities that we've done in the past, they shape our current life and our... The things that happen to us, the family we're born into, where we have taken birth. So in a sense, for this Mahabhadang governor, you know, he may have seen that taking this birth as a Muslim was unfavorable. But actually, he got to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu face to face and chant Hare Krishna. I mean, how much more of an auspicious birth could that be? Right? And so we shouldn't judge others in a spiritual sense based on their body. In a material sense, that's there. There is a duality. But at the same time, spiritually, we are not this body. So how do we reconcile that? And the reconciliation for that, for the duality, comes in our behavior. That's how we can see really if where somebody is in spiritually. Do they behave like a devotee? Or do they behave like somebody who's in the mode of ignorance? And how do we see the difference? And Prabhupada describes it in his purport. It comes down to fault finding. The more we're in line with the activities and actions of a pure devotee, the more we will see ourselves as, the more we will see that there is really no one lower than us. And the more we're in line with the mode of darkness or the mode of ignorance, the more we will see is that there's no one greater than us. And there's this pastime in the Mahabharata that kind of describes this mentality, where Lord Krishna asks Maharaj Yudhisthira to go out into the kingdom and try to find someone that's lower than him. And he asks Duryodhana to go out into the kingdom and try to find somebody that's higher than him. And both come back to Lord Krishna, and Maharaj Yudhisthira says he actually can find anyone that's lower than him. And Duryodhana comes back and he says that actually he can't find anybody who's greater than him. So the more that we're in line with not seeing the faults in others, with seeing the good in others, and seeing the faults in ourselves, the more we're in line with the behavior of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the more we're in line with that of a pure devotee. And the more that we see in others their faults and the things that we feel that hold them back, and the more we criticize others, and the more we gossip about others, the more we're in line with Yodhana and the mode of ignorance. And so why does this difference exist? Where is the origin of the difference between the mode of goodness and the mode of darkness? That separation was created when we originally in the spiritual world became envious of Krishna. And so in this life, we're trying to, in a way, be the supreme. And so we're always in competition with others to try to be better than them. And so when we see some fault in others, and when we criticize them, in a way, we're trying to bring them down. or we're trying to raise ourselves up. And maybe it's innocent, because that's the mode of ignorance. Really, we don't see that before we come to Krishna consciousness. We don't see the difference. And the modes of nature play on those differences, on the three modes. I mean, not to say the modes of nature, but our culture and our society play on the three modes of nature. So to be successful, we have to be passionate. And to be seen, and so some careers or some jobs we need to be passionate. Some careers or jobs we need to be in the mode of ignorance. I mean, the one that comes to me most obviously would be just the meat industry, working in the meat industry. Have to be in the mode of ignorance. How can you do these activities and really realize what you're doing? You wouldn't do it. And the people that do realize what they're doing, many of them go crazy and commit suicide because they see how evil this is. So our society plays on these three modes, and they're there because we chose poorly. We became envious of Krishna, and we wanted to feel what we felt it was like to be Krishna, to have no one that's higher than us, like Duryodhana. We wanted to have that feeling. But then we start to realize through spiritual life that we may come into contact with devotees, or we may have some traumatic events where we really need to question the purpose of our own existence. Because we start to see that after time and time again, we're not experiencing happiness. We're looking for happiness, but why are we depressed? Why are we anxious? Why are we not able to succeed to the level we want to succeed? Why do we have difficulties in relationships? Or we may have some traumatic event where we lose someone in our lives, or we have a relationship that becomes broken that was very close to us, or we come into trouble with the law. And then we have to question our own actions and our own reality. Is this real? And fortunately, sometimes we come into contact with devotees who can answer these questions, or Srila Prabhupada's books. And that's why Sankirtan is so important, because there are people out there that are ready to inquire, but they don't have any access to the answers. They're actually ready. They're sponges, they're ready to take up Krishna consciousness. They've come to that point where they're like trying to figure out why they're suffering, that they realize that they're suffering. They have some moment of clarity that Krishna gives them through intense suffering, and they're ready to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're ready to hear in Bhagavad Gita. And that's why Sankirtan, and when you do Sankirtan, you come into contact with these people, and it's so obvious to you that they're ready. And that may only happen a few percent of the time on some days. And some days it may seem like everybody's ready for Krishna consciousness. And some days it may seem like there's nobody. Why am I out here doing Sankirtan? Why? There's nobody that's ready to hear this message. You know? But there are. There are many people. So I'll say an example of fault finding from my own experience. Had a very traumatic event where I felt, just because of my body and my position in society, that I should be immediately forgiven. And the people that were actually bringing this, bringing this against me, that actually I was so angry with them. And it took a lot of humiliation, deep humiliation, to really to surrender. And that was about 2 or 3 years before I met devotees. I was intoxicated and I got in a car accident. And as I was being arrested, I thought, one one last ditch effort to try to get out of this hellish like situation. You know, I told the police officer, you know, to try to let me go. I said, no, but I'm a physician. You know, how crazy is that thought? You know, that because of my position in society, that the actions that I do should immediately be forgiven. But isn't that what we see? That people with money are somehow able to just pay off all of the evil that they do and to get free from that. But Krishna sees all of that, so don't worry. He's taking care of all these things. But that was my mentality. That is the mode of ignorance. That is that evil thought that, you know, just because of who I am and my accomplishments, that others should give me respect. But all those accomplishments have come from Krishna. Krishna is the ability in man. Everything that I have is because of Krishna. Right? And so for some time, you know, I really had this grudge, this resentment against law enforcement. You know, I have to share that with you. I didn't really see that these people were really doing good, that were really protecting me and protecting society. I really felt that, you know, that every time that I had gotten in trouble, you know, it was just like, you know, just let me off, you know, I'm a good person. You know, it's the same mentality that children have. You know, and this childish mentality is the mode of ignorance, is what it is. And we can live like that our whole lives and be in adults, you know, and not learn a thing about spiritual life and act in this way. The way we see that is fault finding. The way we see that in ourselves and the way we see that in others is the propensity to criticize. And when we see that in ourselves, we should see that we have some work to do. And when we see it in others, we should also see that we have work to do. Because when we have pure Krishna consciousness, we see the good in others. And we don't really hate the person for their faults. We just see the fault for what it is. It's the saying goes that hate the sin and not the sinner. So I'll just make reference to a few other shlokas to kind of solidify this point. Yayato Vishayan Punsa Sangas Te Shupajate Sangat Sangayate Kama Kama Krodha Vijayate Krodha Bhavati Samodha Samohat Smriti Vibramaha Smriti Brangsa Buddhi Naso Buddhi Nasa Pranasyati. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops. And from lust, anger arises. And from anger, complete delusion arises. And from delusion, bewilderment of memory. And when memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. You know, in a sense, this verse is describing how we came into the material world. But in another sense, the verse is describing, you know, can be describing every moment of our lives. If we have the mentality that we're the body and that the material world is a place for our enjoyment, and if we try to use this material energy for our enjoyment, eventually, we will get stung. We will get hurt, and we will become depressed and angry and in anxiety. And that's the nature of trying to misuse of the material world, because this material energy is Krishna's energy. And really the purpose of Krishna's energy is to be offered to Krishna, to have that realization that everything we have that's good or that's bad is coming from Krishna. And when we have that vision, we have pure Krishna consciousness. I recall when I first started reading Bhagavad Gita, there's that plate in Bhagavad Gita where it shows the yogi who has equal vision, and it shows in each living entity, what does it show, picture of? Yeah, the super soul, right? And I felt like when I came to Krishna consciousness, just for a few moments, I had this pure vision. I loved that painting and that verse, because it really was something that I could connect with, that I could see that, yeah, sometimes in Western culture, you have the picture with the person, and then on one side is the angel and the other side is the devil. So I could connect with that in my Western mind. I could see that, oh, that's Krishna. He's actually there. He's actually, the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita is actually in every living entity. And if I could have that vision, then how could I criticize such a person who's trying to reconnect with Krishna? Right? And that equal vision didn't last long for me, you know, because I'm still working on my Krishna consciousness and I still see faults in others. But at least having that knowledge in Bhagavad Gita has been really paramount for my Krishna consciousness. This is a letter from Srila Prabhupada. This is a letter, December 1972. Our business is to raise ourselves to the highest status of life as preachers of Krishna's message. And one should behave himself rigidly. Then he should instruct others. Two things. Be himself exemplary. Then teach others to be exemplary. If one has not come to that high standard, he could not judge or criticize others. There is one saying from the Bible, judge not, lest ye be judged. So how can we preach unless we are able to make judgments? That will not be possible. Only those who are above suspicion can judge others. One must himself act in such a way that he is always above suspicion. Then he can judge. Then he can preach. But now you have no power to instruct. One who is not following himself, how can he instruct others? So Srila Prabhupada is asking us to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, to follow in his footsteps, and not to imitate, but to actually follow our own instructions, because we're all preachers of Krishna consciousness in one way or another. We've all learned something about the process of bhakti yoga, so we all have something to share with others. But how is it that we can instruct others not to criticize when we ourselves are criticizing, when we ourselves are finding faults in others and are gossiping? So Srila Prabhupada is asking us to be exemplary. And how can we be exemplary? They do not know that the Europeans and Americans have already been purified by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So wake up early, which means go to sleep early. Chant our rounds. Come to morning program. Read Srila Prabhupada's books. Distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. And always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And this is how we can be exemplary. And this is how we can be example to others and to the whole world. And this is how we can come from the mode of ignorance to the mode of goodness and eventually to Krishna consciousness. And realize that we're not this body. We're not this Muslim body. We're not this Hindu body. We're not this American body. But really we forgot that our original position is at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. And so just coming to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual master, we can come to realize this. And so I'll end there with any questions or comments.
Is there envy in the spiritual world? Is there envy in the spiritual world?
The question is there envy in the spiritual world? There are all emotions in the spiritual world. In Krishna, there are all emotions. And so there are all emotions that are shared between Krishna and his devotees in the spiritual world. The difference is that a devotee sees everything as an opportunity to serve Krishna. So he doesn't see anything as an opportunity to be self-serving. So envy in the sense that we want to be Krishna and we want we want others to serve us. This is material envy. But having that emotion of really seeing someone else as greater than you, in a sense, you want them to succeed. That you're not jealous in the sense of wanting to be them, but you're seeing that they have these wonderful qualities, and you're wanting to appreciate that person, and you're wanting them to succeed. Another example besides envy is anger. I mean, is there anger in the spiritual world? What is the proper use of anger? So if the proper use of envy is to see that others have these wonderful qualities and wanting to appreciate them, what is the use of spiritual anger? Well, anger is there in the material sense. Like we read that verse from Bhagavad Gita, we get angry when we don't get what we want. But also, anger is really a reaction to protect us. So if we are, you know, if our child is in danger, we become angry to defend them. So we're not defending ourselves and our own pride and our own self-righteousness, but we're protecting the safety and the well-being of others. So you'll see spiritual anger in a sense. And sometimes Krishna will create pastimes where you think like, wow, look at this. This is material lust, right? I mean, there are so many pastimes where, you know, Srila Prabhupada says, you know, read Srimad Bhagavatam from Canto 1 through Canto 10. Then he gave us the Krishna book, which is the 10th canto, right? So we can see that in these pastimes, if we don't have the knowledge, we'll see material lust, but actually it's spiritual love. So sometimes to be qualified to see what all the spiritual emotions are, all the emotions, to see them from the spiritual sense, we have to start from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, to develop that spiritual vision. But yes, in the spiritual world, there are all the emotions. They're all there. Does that answer your question?
So it's very popular topic among devotees now that you shouldn't criticize. I mean, that you would be out of a job if you couldn't criticize people, right? Because people are in critical condition. Right? And an editor is a critic. They take it apart and put it back together, and they're hired by the person who wants them to find fault. That means there's some standard of behavior. You mentioned the craziness of people in society. They can't work, you know, so they're classed as schizophrenic, or they're classed as, what is that word, psychotic. Psychotic, you know, they just behave out of mind. There's a Vedic link, and that is that the Vana Sankara. The Vana Sankara doesn't necessarily say that their mother doesn't want them or their father doesn't want them. It's that there's no place in society for them. And so they're disqualified people. So going back to the verse, which is, you know, the Muslim is asking, why isn't it Krishna can give me an advantage? But isn't it such an advantage to be disadvantaged in spiritual life? And you could open that up. I have another question.
Yeah, so that to be, isn't it advantage, I like that, to be disadvantaged. Yes, I mean, in my own experience, visiting parts of the world where people are poor, they have this simplicity to them that makes it easier for them to have spiritual vision. They're more, it just seems like just because they have less, it's like automatically humility and appreciation and gratitude. It's like already part of them. They don't have to learn it by having something taken away. So by being born disadvantaged, in a sense, they have one step up on us because they already have many of these mode of goodness qualities. So I would think that, yes, because it's because of the mode of goodness that they have that advantage sometimes.
Yeah, they have an edge on humility. And then having that edge on humility, it distances the person from what you're talking about. Criticism can be with love. But when criticism is just envy, and that, as far as my understanding, envy has two sides, both opposing. And one is seeing yourself better than others, or seeing others lesser than you. It works both ways. Right? That means someone's highly positioned. But why are they in a high position? I should be in a high position. Or this is a lesser position, but you know that makes me better. That's the poison aspect of envy. And so that's unnecessary criticism. That's you know what you're talking about as something we should abolish is that envious criticism. But in order to preach, I suppose, you have to have your embrace the standard, and then from there, with love, criticism. Right or wrong?
Yes. So it's like we have to follow the process, but it's the process itself that purifies us. So how do we know if we're imitating by just following the process? So in preaching, yes, we need to see. I mean, so Uttama Adhikari comes down to Madhyama Adhikari to preach because they have to see who's pure devotee, who's, you know, needs to hear the preaching. But at the same time, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, it purifies our heart just by the chanting. And it's the platform from which we perform Sankirtan. So if we're not following the process, that's what Srila Prabhupada is asking us to do, to be exemplary, then we can instruct. So we have to follow the process so that it will support our preaching. We can't just preach. So it's both that have to work together. So we have to have something to give, and that something to give comes from chanting Hare Krishna every day in japa. Kirtan is wonderful, and I definitely feel more enlivened when I'm around the devotees and dancing and doing kirtan and seeing the deities. But I find that the realization that comes that helps me with preaching and the purification, so that I can see that I am a fault finder. That realization for me comes through japa. So that has to happen simultaneously with the preaching. So I'll end there so we don't go too long, and then if we have any questions, we can discuss after. Oh yes, one more question from a different... This will be the last question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. So we hear that whatever is in the material world, any emotions, that it's actually a perverted reflection of what exists in the spiritual world. Like, for example, in the material world, the lust. So actual, it's lust in a pure form is nothing but love in the spiritual world, right? So when we say, as Prabhuji was asking, if envy exists in the spiritual world, and the envy exists here in the material world. So what is it called in the spiritual world? Like the lust in the material world, we are saying it's a perverted reflection of the love in the spiritual world. So the envy in the material world, what's its original form in the spiritual world? How do you describe that in the spiritual world? What it is like? Is that a question?
I don't know that it has a different word.
Whatever it is, it enhances the love, it enhances the love. Everything that enhances the exchange of love. I think in our general concept of envy, it's, you know, it wouldn't be there, but if there's some sort of expression we might think of in that way, it enhances, like, okay, like a couple, like sometimes one of the couples works with someone else, and then it intensifies their actual relationship. It's really not interesting to the person, but if they get that envy that gets aroused,
yeah, that's a very nice way to describe it. I mean, it's in a playful mood. You know, it has to do with the mood, I think. I mean, when the mood is that you actually want to kind of usurp the person's position, then that's envy in the material sense. But like what you said, like when some of these other moods and rasas, they intensify our relationship with Krishna in one way or another. It's because there's all variety, and it just keeps the relationship interesting. Otherwise, it would be kind of dull. If there was no competition at all, it would be boring. There has to be some competition, but the mood of the competition is not to usurp Krishna's position, but it's to enhance the relationship. Thank you.
thinking, it's not that reflection doesn't mean it changes the name. Like lust is here, and there is a transcendental lust. Lust doesn't become love like it, and something wrong with here. No, it's still lust, but it's transcendental lust, not mundane lust. Mundane lust is opposite. If we analytically study envy, so for an example, Prabhupada gave an example in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Radharani comes in front of Krishna and see another girl right next to Krishna, and she becomes very envy. Said, why this girl is here? Then Lalita Sukhi comes and tapped to Radharani. This is the reflection. It's not another. And that pleased Krishna so much that she is so much in love with me, she cannot tolerate that another person so close to me. But that was her reflection. Because she is so transparent, so pure, that it created another image next to touching Krishna's body. So the purpose of the envy over there is there, but it's pleasing Krishna. And when Radharani realized also that it pleased actually Krishna, she is also satisfied. But envy here, that I want to be the best, and I don't want, there's two perceptions we can see, envy, all the envy, more or less. I don't want anybody else to be like me, as best as me, and there's no way I can be ever have a competition, I should be always above. So that's harmful. Because the soul does not get satisfaction. Neither it pleases Krishna.
Right. Thank you, we'll end there. So, Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premananda.